and the big hands on 12 are at least past it. So if we can get started, some of you folks haven't met me. I'm Alan Jessica, the snowbird that just wandered up from the north, and you guys didn't have very good weather for me when I got here. So anyway, I arrived about April Fool's Day, which was appropriate for me. And I also was able to run out to the Dirt Hugger with Rich and some of the folks here, and appreciate that. And that was a well done thing. I enjoyed that. I think we have, I haven't met a couple members of the board. You don't have your sign plate up, so I don't think I've met you before.
No.
There we go. Okay, you're Warren, right?
Yes, sir.
And is Chris here? Okay, no Chris. Okay, there's a Chris that's evidently new, too.
Chris Proctor. Yes.
Do you have a listing of who is excused and et cetera? So we're all set.
So Simone is out this week. And Rob is, well, Scott.
Yeah, I know.
And Allie, she'll either be late or she will talk to us today. It depends on how the
list goes. Yeah, I know there's a lot of things going on. This is my second meeting, running back and forth and everything, too. So I'd like to welcome everybody who's here. Can we have an introduction in the back row there, where who you are and who you're representing?
I'm Jeff Harbison, Chief Finance Officer for Public Health.
Hey, Mike Davis, Solid Waste Operations.
Janice Koch, I'm the Chief Performance Officer for Clark County Public Health.
Derek Grant of Waste Connections.
Okay. Thank you. Call a meeting to order then. Approval of the minutes from the February meeting that I was AWOL from, or at least I was in some place where it was nice and warm. Everybody should have, Kim sent them out. If you looked them over, is there any additions or corrections to that? If not, shall we approve them as read or as written? A motion?
A move.
So moved. Second?
Second.
Okay, it's been moved and seconded. Those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed?
Okay. I'm going to abstain because I was not at the meeting.
Okay, well, neither was I, but I have to run it, so. Thanks, Steve. Okay, we go to updates. Clark County Public Health. Chuck, what are we doing?
So, yeah, I wanted to start and have Janice, we start the recruitment request went out for a program manager for the solid waste program back in, I think, March. And that's what went out, April. And so I just wanted to have Janice come up, you know.
So I was actually, I was just telling Mike, I was sitting here sending an email to Rich to see if he could be on our interview panel, and I'm typing away. I looked up and I was like, whoa, wait a minute. There he is. We had a small pool of applicants, and we've narrowed it down to two people that we want to interview. And so hopefully our dream candidate will be in that pool. If not, we'll have to go out and shake the trees some more.
Is the salary commensurate with this? About that same level around the country?
That's an excellent question. I can't answer it.
Okay.
The classification is program manager 2, which in our organization, all of our program managers are program managers 2, unless their program is real small or not just small, but maybe less complex in the work that they do, those are program manager 1s. So within our organization, it fits with what we have. But that we will have to look at salary if we can't get candidates.
Okay. Any problem for the budget, man?
Well, so human resources in Clark County, they do a salary study fairly frequently to make sure we are basically at that market.
Okay, so were there any other questions about the PM?
The interview is coming up.
Well, depending on how Rich responds to my email.
You've got a prisoner here.
Yeah, right. I'm hoping to have interviews the week of May 22nd.
May 22nd.
So It will probably be the 22nd, 23rd, or 24th.
Okay. Well, we hope that you find one.
Thank you. Me too.
No fun running around with no head on the body, you know, like headless horse. Headless horse.
Well, Chuck.
Well, we have two heads.
Yeah, Chuck is Chuck right now is overseeing the operations side, which he's been doing an amazing job with that. And then Cindy Steinbarger has been overseeing the education and outreach side. We'd like to bring those two together so we can get a united vision, and I think it'll be a good for the team.
Thank you very much.
So I wanted to give a couple of quick updates. I didn't pull the email up, but basically just wanted to give everyone an update. You know, we've been tracking as best we can the funding for the, as you know, I think we talked about this in the past, the Model Toxics Control Act funding had been reduced the last biennium, and so the department took, and of course SWEO took cuts at that time. The governor proposed a $10 million for what's called a part of that, which is the coordinated intervention grant, which funds the kind of education outreach programs. It funds solid waste enforcement. It also funds our site hazard assessment fund. And basically, the status as we understand it is that both the House and the Senate budget still have the $10 million in them, but one's funded from a capital account, and but they're in both of those budgets and the governor's budget, but it's still a reduction. We'll talk a little bit more about some of that, those issues in a few presentation later, but I just want to give you guys an update that right now it looks like the $10 million is there, and if they can reconcile around $10 million, it may just come down to how does it get funded, but right now at least no one's zeroed it out completely. So that's good news, but it still represents about a 33% cut from the prior cut, which was about 50%. And again, we have a little more information about that in regards to the presentation later. But just giving you an update, we sent a note to Ecology, and again, they're in their first special session, the legislature, and that's supposed to end like sometime next week or the week after. I forget when it's like 30 days, but anyway, so hopefully when they'll finish that with an agreement on the funding for MODCA and CPG as part of MODCA, and we'll know better where we stand as far as that grant funding source.
And our advocacy letter got sent out.
I had asked, Peter Lyon,
yeah.
Yeah, for some templates, and I didn't really hear back from him. Oh. And I was kind of like, the deadline was not sure, so we were able to get something together in time.
And I just, that's a great question. I mean, one of the other things to keep in mind, because I think this has happened to us on a couple of these grants, we'll like get an alert from like one of the, like the Washington Association of Counties, or about funding issues or rural issues. But generally, any support for programs or funding, we would start with us. We have to go to the board. It's really the board that would have to issue those letters, and there's a timeline there. So sometimes we've gotten requests, and it's hard to get all of our ducks in a row and get it to the board in time for them to decide whether, and then they can decide not to write a letter of support or not. But
The board of counselors,
yeah. Just a little insight into that process. Mm-hmm. If we do decide to request, have a letter sent to the legislature on a piece of funding or something like that, that's a process we have to go through.
But at the last meeting, SWACA had a motion to put together a letter from SWACA.
Right. To the board.
To the board or to the legislature.
Yeah. To the legislature, but mm-hmm. So we would have to pass that by the board of counselors.
I'll double check. I think everything.
Yeah.
All right, we'll get this story.
Okay.
The commissioner. Captain.
But again, it's better than, because at one point I think the Senate budget had it at zero with CPG funds. So we think we're in a better place than the last update, that, since it's both in the House and the Senate budget. So the other update, I think you forwarded, we also, we're coming up on the, we finished the first quarter of this year, the solid waste enforcement grants and an update report. I think it got sent out to everyone. If not, we'll send that out to you again. It's, the summary of Melissa Sutton's work on the enforcement side regarding her inspections at the transfer stations and other facilities. There is an application in for an application of kind of bio, what are considered, it's not biosolids as you would traditionally think of them, to land apply some of them. We may call a special meeting of the board to review that permit application in a month, or probably at the latest 2 months from now. So we'll give you an update on that. But basically, this report is, again, she's kept up with the agreed upon number of inspections. There's also a list of a summary of complaints responded to. And
was there anything that stood out and bothered you, Chuck?
I think this first quarter things have been nothing significant that had come up.
Well, after all the rain we've had, all the leachate that ever is going to come out should be out by now. You know, from those.
Yeah. I'm not aware of any inspections or problems that came up. Obviously with all the weather we had, and this doesn't fall completely under Melissa's responsibilities. I mean, with the bad weather and the icy conditions, we had a lot of material stack up at the transfer facilities for a while during the storms. And there was a situation at one of them where there was some seepage out of the containers.
Yeah, so what had occurred is it was a kind of double whammy. Going into the fall, the Corps had a long-term lock closure plan. And unfortunately, going into that, I warned everybody, we haven't had a bad winter in a long time, so we better plan ahead. And sure enough, we had multiple closures of the Corps, you know. And the trucks could not get back and forth because we couldn't barge, so we were trucking. And Wasco County Landfill is the backup landfill for these types of situations, and the road conditions up there were horrendous also. So we just really had a lot of problems at certain times getting the containers in and out. And all in all, I think R&R Trucking and CRC did a great job getting that out, but right towards the end there were some containers that, they were struggling to get containers back and forth, and these were some older containers that had, were probably not in the best shape, and they were left at the Tidewater Yard probably a little longer than they should have, but they eventually got them out and got everything cleaned up. But there was some rainwater infiltration into the cans because they weren't sealed real well. But other than that, for what we were facing, both winter-wise and the long-term closure, I think it went pretty well. I mean, your garbage still left the cavern.
Well, when we took that dirt hooker trip up, we saw that it looked like the semis have been playing bumper pool with all the guardrails and everything because they were just destroyed. And about one out of every three trees in the forest is down too. So, not to mention the height of at that time the river was flooding too. So we had all must have been.
Yeah, we're still dealing with some container shortages because of the river kind of coming up and down and some scheduling issues. So there has been some materials left on the floor overnight, which we prefer not to have happen. But overall, I think it was pretty smooth transition back into barging. And it is what it is,
No problem with the boardman there.
Not really. Boardman, is open for business.
Yep.
But I guess the last thing I'd say about the solid waste report that I think is significant, and I think we've shown this in prior quarterlies, when you look at the bottom for number of non-facility site solid waste complaints received, it's 46 So that's, you know, again, there's a significant amount of that work that comes into the department that Melissa's able to address. You can see the next number in regards to these metrics are that she was all 44 of them. Some of them are fairly minor, but she does a good job of following up, especially people that are stockpiling garbage and things like that. We're not properly storing it. And so again, that's a big part of the program. And again, the final number of 150 hours during the period, I mean, that's quite a bit of extra work that's created by these calls and these complaint responses.
Well, would you thank her for a very thorough report and tell her that I missed the pretty pictures, though?
Yeah, well, usually there she files
a report,
yeah, that has the documentation. And I think because of some leave and a conference, we'll get that out. But it's hard to email because it's a huge file, so we'll bring that to the next meeting, or we'll find a way to get it available for those that are interested in reviewing that. So then, so the last thing I would like to spend a little time on, and it'll save us time later in the agenda, is we had is the Circle C landfill post-closure termination process. So we did a public comment period through March. We also lined up to present the criteria for post-closure criteria to the Board of Health as a public meeting on, I think that was the 26th of April. And so we conducted that meeting. I don't know, and again, it was just to present to them the work that we had presented to you in regards to what are the criteria that we've done research on, its proposed criteria. At the same meeting, the owners and their representatives also provided their feedback, and they had also provided to us in writing during the public comment period about the issues they have with some of the criteria that we've laid out for them, extra wells, certain parameters that are in the groundwater protection criteria that we had cited. So we've been asked, and so basically at that, you know, my intent was always to work with the property owners, but at that meeting, we realized that it probably would have been good to communicate and work with them ahead of time, because we were sort of, it was really coming to the Board of Health that they weren't in agreement with what we had been working on and laying out. So right now what we're planning to do, we haven't set up the meeting yet, but we'll be, and Ecology's been assisting us, we will be planning a meeting with the site owners and their representatives to go through the criteria, figure out what their counter proposals are in regards to some of the elements that we've outlined, and then see if we can come to an agreement that we think, again, is still protective of public health, and then return back to the board. There's two paths here. One is return back to the board with an agreement that us in Ecology feel is protective enough, it gets us the data that we need. Or if we can't come to agreement, what we believe we'll have to do at that if that's what we get, is have a work session with the Board of Counselors, which is not a public meeting, but just to review our positions and our recommendation. And at that point, we'd assume that the board would either say yes or no. I think once we've come to terms, if we come to terms about changes to or an agreement on what parameters they'll sample for and whether they'll have to add so many additional wells, et cetera, we'll also keep the SWAC updated. But we, you know, what I realized is we were laying out a process, and I wanted to sort of talk to the criteria that we felt was protective, but we always expected that we would have that conversation. But what I've learned through the process is that we should have had that conversation before we brought it in front of the board, and so that's what we'll be doing now. But anyway, I think we're ultimately in the same place, but still, we should have set the process up differently. So
it isn't quite square one, though.
Not square one. No, I think again, we there's a few things they've already, in essence, agreed to. Again, the big issues really are
extra wells.
Do they need extra wells? Certainly the most costly thing. And secondly, what parameters would they really need to sample for? And So that's where their biggest difference of opinion is as far as our approach.
Was there any sampling with all this extra rain, since we have a foot more rain in our water year than we're supposed to have? Was there any extra leachate or anything detected?
Well, whenever the winter, there's always been higher levels of leachate, you know, higher volumes of leachate that come out of the landfill. And so that's always been the situation.
Has that been sampled or?
They do sample it periodically. Again, a few years ago, under the permit, the department had agreed to just a basic level, there's just minor parameters to be sampled. Generally, I think in the winter, the levels are lower because it's more diluted. The process is moving forward, but obviously we'll have to do that step where we'll work with them, try to come to terms, and then bring it back to the Board of Health, Board of Counselors. So those are my updates for us. And I think Kim has some thoughts.
Yeah. Alan, did you already talk about the dirt of your tour you went on? Did you want to talk about that?
Yeah, I can. Yes. Well, there was quite a group of us. We took three cars, and this was, I came home on a Saturday, and this was Monday morning, bright and early. We met, and there was about, 15 of us or so, and we went to up the Oregon side of Freeway 84 to the Dalles, crossed over to Dallesport, and just as you get up to the top of the Dallesport, is the dirt hugger off to the right, and you can't miss it. It's quite a big operation there, much bigger than it was when it was at the other end of the Dalles, and of course that's where they take the food waste from. Any player that wants to, and any brush or
yard waste,
that kind of stuff, is there. And we were complimented on, or at least Waste Connections was complimented on its truckloads that were brought up there are always nice and clean and don't have too much plastic bags and everything in it. We watched a truck that came from Metro, and I'd never seen this done before. Well, I'd seen it with bark dust, but the trucks are self-dumping. Mike probably knows all about that, but they just walk. They walk themselves all this stuff out. It's just really neat. They emptied while we were there. They emptied a 40-footer, and at least 40 feet, and it was dumping Metro stuff. And there was waste in there that they have to go through and hand-pick that stuff. And put it in containers and that. And the person that took us through there, Pierce Lewis, said that that was a rather clean load from Metro. But he says our loads from our vendors are always clean in that. And what they do is they lay it all out, and then they cover it with bark material. And they have drainage underneath for the leachate that comes out. They have air and both blown into it and taken out. And of course, this heats itself. You know, it's a spontaneous combustion type thing, and it kills the microbes in the mix. And quite often you'll see steam coming out because it's so warm. And this is turned two or three times a week, and it continues to. They have a machine that actually just keeps windrowing this thing further and further across, and it comes out at the end when it goes through a screen and a big grinder and a screen. It comes out and into very, very delightful compost. And there's no smell in the, hardly any smell in the whole operation. The compost sells for $45 a yard, cubic yard, and they have all the buyers for that that they can handle because it's very nutritious, and the there's a lot of fruit trees. Pears, apples, orchards in the area, and this fertilizer is good for that. And so they just they can sell as much as they can make. Looks like a good operation. They have ability to expand in the north if they so desire. And it looked like a going machine. And they have 12 employees now, I think, is the two entrepreneurs, and then they have like 12 employees now, and could get bigger. Anything you saw extra?
It was great.
Yeah, great visit, and they did a good job. Yes.
Yeah, on the Portland, the Metro loads, those are combined, right? Food and yard waste.
Well, yes. Yeah, there was.
So are just yard waste get blended with Metro's mixed bins?
No, ours is almost always food. It goes up.
Well, that's right. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, ours is food.
It's about one third food, yeah. Two thirds yard green.
Yeah.
So okay.
The yard green is a bulky agent.
Okay.
But Metro had mostly yard debris in that, and a lot of, well, there wasn't a lot, but there's quite a bit of plastic. And then one poor guy, I guess it was his turn in the barrel, he had to go around there and pick it all out, and they put it in garbage cans. And it's funny, he gave us a little aside. You know, all those nice garbage cans and blue containers that we have for our refuse and all that. All the ones, they must have had, 20 of them out there? And they all came in the load. They didn't have to buy any of them. They were all in the trucks somehow. Somehow they got in the trucks, you know. So it was quite a thing. But it was well worth the trip, and I'd like to do that anytime.
Okay. And we'll continue to share those opportunities as they come. So the Clean Car Campaign, for those of you that don't know, is a outreach campaign where we go out and peek inside recycling carts and leave a little tag, giving them feedback, you know, like we saw plastic bags or glass or other common disposed items in a recycling cart. So that will be starting on May 15th and go through June 9th. And right now we're recruiting temps to be a part of that team. So if you know anyone, it's a perfect summer project for college students that are out of school. You can send them my way. Or they can go to Northwest Staffing directly and sign up. We had 4 Recycling Day events. And since we last met, we had 580 people come out to Vancouver, about 120 to Yackfolds, 420 to Richfield, and 160 to Little Center. We'll be out at Camas this Saturday, and then Washougal the following Saturday, and then Battleground will be our last one on May 20th. So those were pretty successful. Each event had a different item that was very popular. So Vancouver was really popular with shredding, Yakult with tires, Richfield with scrap metal, and Little Center with electronics.
I went to drop some off at Battleground at the pill, the medical excess pills and that my wife had, and I've been trying to find a place to drop them off. Well, Battleground was also having their plant sale for the high school, so I did both of them at the same time, and that was well run. That was the Battleground Police Station, and I noticed I'm a volunteer at Legacy Hospital, and Legacy Hospital had a volunteer there helping out. And I got there rather early. I don't know how much they did, but the article in the paper said that the event collected 2,400 pounds of pills. That's over a ton. More than 1,000 people showed up at Kaiser Permanente, Cascade, Battleground, and that took 2,400 pounds of pills out of our community. So we did a job there.
So there's 3 recycling days coming up, and that'll be the end of those for the year. We changed things this year to where we did all of them in spring, so there won't be any coming up in fall.
Can you send us an email on the dates and where they're going to be?
Yeah.
That's good. If you haven't been to one of these, it's fun to go and see what they do. The one that I went to was in Battleground a year or so ago, and the line was down the block for 3-4 blocks, matter of fact.
So, and then also we had three new paint stores come on board with the paint take back program since we last met in February. There's now a location, another location in Salmon Creek at Ace Hardware. There's Sylvan's Ace in Hazeldale. And then we got a location in Battleground, the first paint store in Battleground, so we're pretty excited about that, and that's at Ace Hardware again. Also, a new Park Rose opened up at Hazeldale, and after talking to some other Park Rose managers, that they probably will be interested, probably in fall, to join partners with them as well. So I'll check in with them then, and then it'll be all Park Rose locations again at that time. So now there are 12 paint store locations, plus the three transfer stations that have paint-related materials.
Does the place that's on the end of, just before you get to the freeway that sells used lumber on that, still taking it?
Habitat
for Humanity?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yes, they do. They take quite a lot.
Yeah.
They're our busiest location for that.
If anybody needs paint, they usually have it out there too for you to take away from them.
Also, I wanted to make sure you all were aware that the Regional Solid Waste System Steering Committee is on May 12th coming up. And I went to a SWANA conference, which is the Solid Waste Association of North America. I went to that last week and toured a few transfer stations in Washington, around Seattle and Bellevue. And I was just really taken aback with how beautiful, like, transfer stations and the potential future for Clark County, what we could possibly venture into. So it was pretty exciting, and I have pictures on my phone if anybody's super interested. I probably took an embarrassing number of pictures. So if you're interested, just let me know. And also, I have a Green Schools update for Michelle Sinich, who runs that program. She was at our last meeting and did the presentation. So I have these cards she wanted me to hand out. And she wanted me to share with you all that the Trex Challenge, where they collect plastic bags at schools, wrapped up with about 30 schools participating. The top winners are with 18,000 pounds of film, which is quite a lot considering how lightweight film is. The top winners were Mill Plain Elementary, our media parts school, and Latimas Heights Elementary. And then they also performed 8 waste audits in 2017, collecting a number of data. And the focus has primarily been on our spring school district, which, as she shared with us all, has seen an increase in the amount of disposables. So that is Michelle's update. And then Sarah had updates for Green Neighbors. Did you want to share, right?
Yes.
Okay.
We have a number of different things coming up in the next couple months. I think the one that Sally was most excited to share with you all is the next date for the upcoming repair cafe, where people can bring small items that need repairs to volunteers who will then see what they can do to mend, replace, and fix those. And I have some brochures to hand out about that. And hopefully Recycled Arts Festival isn't anything new to anyone in this room, but the update on that is that this year they'll be having a procession of the species, which is a way to engage the community in creating costumes made out of repurposed recycled materials and parading down the street in the costumes, and it's just fun and a good family event. So we're hosting workshops leading up to that where children and families can come and create masks and costumes. And I have, I guess that information, the actual dates of that is on the website, but I do have some Recycled Arts Festival cards for the date this year that I'll pass around as well. And also a brochure for medications and sharps to take back. And I guess I can just kick these off down the row. And then last but not least, in July, the Natural Garden Tour is happening on the 23rd. I wanted to say 6th, the 23rd. So stay tuned for details on that. We don't have any printed materials available for that yet.
And then I do have one proposed change to the agenda, if that's all right. He needs to leave early today, and if he could go before the proposed fee increases, if that's all right.
Go ahead.
Everyone.
I was too paid for that.
Okay, Pete, what you got?
We have.
And I got your mother's
check. Nice. So we do have some drinking items, mugs. There's a memento for swag members. And recycler program. I'm going to give just a quick overview, probably 15, 20 minutes, but certainly ask any questions as you go along. The program has been around, I want to say, since 1992, which would make this 25-year anniversary, which we haven't planned yet. So, Master Composting started in the Northwest, these programs. So this goes all the way back to some of our real waste reduction work that we've been doing out in the public. It's been housed in a number of different places and only recently has come to Clark County and Clark County Public Health. And we assumed control of the program end of April of 2016. Prior to that, it's been at Washington State University Extension. It's been Columbia Springs most recently. And there have been a number of amazing folks who have run this program over those years. And so we have inherited a real treasure. We do a 10-week training that runs currently end of January through the end of March. We meet around the county. We talk about, we bring in guest speakers, and basically we're training folks to become experts in 30 hours for our recycling programs, and then also with a real focus on how to compost in your backyard, how to compost using red worms. And then we have a green cleaning component for the healthy indoor component as well. So these are our new graduates from 2017, and you can see it's a fun bunch. You can even see that it was shining sun back in March. So we picked a good day. And as part of our training, they will also take one day off and do a tour. This is at West Van, so we had a great opportunity to go see that site. We come go to the Habitat for Humanity store, where they can see how building materials can be reused. We stop by one of our compost demonstration sites, which is at Brush Prairie. And then we also go to a business that's local here in Kansas called Northwest Red Worms, and he is managing several hundred tons of food waste from large grocers, and just an expert, and again, a real asset to this community. One of the key contest components that we have is we break everyone up into teams, so there's some team learning, and we give them some basic supplies And over the course, training course, they have to gather materials and then build their own compost piles. And we give them all thermometers, and whoever gets the hottest pile wins. It's called the Hot Pile Contest. It's been going for a number of years. I've changed it around this year to give them all uniform bins, so it's a very equal competition. And this is the winning team, and they got their bin up to 150 degrees. So it's pretty good. Okay, in addition to the training, we also are very active out in the community with our outreach programs. Here is our booth at the Home and Garden Idea Fair, which just wrapped up. You can see we've got a compost bin there on the right that we raffle off. We had 267 folks enter that prize drawing, so we're pretty excited about that. There's a very small blue bin where we keep worms, so we show folks how the worms live in a bin. We also have a bigger bin, in case you want to see that. And then on the far left, you can see a hoop where we have materials that they can recycle that go into the blue cart that's connected to that hoop. We also put in some plastic bags, which can't go in the cart, and also can't be thrown through a hoop. So it makes it very easy to educate them that they actually have to walk it to that bin that you find in a safe way. So the messaging here, again, recycling and composting. We also, this year, wanted to get folks to download the app, which all the SWAC members should have on their phones, which is a little blue recycle cart, because that certainly helps us push out notifications if needed with Runner. Also, it has the recycling A to Z on it, so if they have questions, they don't have to keep asking us. They can just go to their app. And then to do that, we enticed them with a utensil set made out of bamboo. That was a big hit. You can see he's got the card, and he's downloading. Unfortunately, the Clark County Bench Center is a very slow download, so we need to speed that up. Okay, we are, in addition to being out in the community, we are also in the classroom. Here's one of our expert ACE presenters, Lou Sully. He's also a financial manager in spare time. And this is out at the Casey site. We've got four different workshops that we offer, and I can pass these around. We do backyard composting, lasagna gardening, green cleaning, and a worm shop. So here we are at our Casey site. You can see a gal's actually stirring up the bin. So after we teach them in the classroom, we always have the hands-on component. And so we will gather up materials and with the attendees build an actual bin so they can get that experience hands-on. Here is a lasagna gardening workshop that we do. This is a no-till method, so if you don't want to have to deal with your grass, you can lay down cardboard and then you can start piling on materials that you gather up in advance in layers of nitrogens and carbons, because that's kind of your balance you want. That's shredded paper going on, so that's a carbon layer. Under that was a lot of coffee and I think grape pumice. You can see bags of manure getting ready to go on there. And then we cover it up and you can plant within couple weeks right into that system. Green cleaning. This is a workshop where we will give them non-toxic materials and they leave with three cleaning, all-purpose cleaner, a window cleaner, and a safer scrubber. And it makes cleaning fun. I have to say that I actually got a kit and I have been cleaning my bathrooms like crazy. So I recommend everyone come to this workshop. And the stuff works. Okay, worm bins, these are big sellers. So we posted on Nextdoor 3 days ago these spring workshops. And I had 60 people sign up for the workshop. So I had to actually turn off our website. No cost in advertising. And we had... in addition to the 60 that signed up for that, we had 40 for our first backyard compost, another 17 for the green cleaning. Luckily, that's a little ways out. So these are really popular. We line up all the bins, and the folks actually leave with a working worm bin. And you can see me holding a handful of worms there. We get about 25 pounds delivered to us. So, again, really popular. And
are they fish tested?
those are pretty good fish worms for sure. Red wiggler worms. Mm-hmm. Again, some of our outreach is at the farmers market. Here's one of our volunteers, Becky Lindsay. She also teaches our green cleaning workshop. She developed asthma and so has really embraced this whole green cleaning and no aromatic things in her house, no scented candles. So she's taken and brought a lot of that information and wealth to our group. The worm bins, not only being a successful worm shop, is one of our key outreach tools. It's really a decomposition bin. You've got a whole lot of things going on there. It's the new FBI, fungi, bacteria, and invertebrates. And so we will actually teach the kids about that, and then we get them a little scoop out of the worm bin, and they get their chopsticks, and then they look, and they can find a whole lot of different critters. They can find the cocoons that the worms actually hatch out of. And that hands-on science is really, really exciting, and the schools have been clamoring to get us in their classrooms. So it's just a scheduling of time. But
they don't do outdoor school anymore, you know. A lot of them don't.
We're doing a partnership with called Farm to Fork over the summertime, and they're going to bring them into the Heritage Farm, so we'll get about 120 kids during the course of a day. So that'll, and we signed up to do 6 of those. So, anyone recognize some of the people here? We've got Mark, the two Marks, and two of our volunteers. This is a little cutout that we have to attract people to our booth. Here we are at the Clark County Fair. You can see we're talking about all of our outreach efforts. This is our big one. We'll hit about 1,000 people at the Home and Garden Idea Fair. We'll hit maybe 3,000 people at the Clark County Fair. The guy on the right who is wearing garbage is Bill Drummond. He is a master volunteer. And he also volunteers at the animal shelter, so very engaged in the community. But he's wearing all the things that you can't put into the blue cart. And it's very, very informative because people will say, well, why, you know, I thought you could put this in and that in. And so he has gone an extra step in promoting what we do. We have monthly meetings with our volunteers to call it enrichment to try to get them more informed. I think the speaker we had this month at this meeting was from Portland Recycling Advocates talking about the outreach they're doing in cafes to try to get folks to do more reusable cups and minimize their waste there. We have an annual volunteer recognition program. We most recently held this at the Water Resource Education Center, which Rich oversees. We appreciate that. Great venue. We've got a lot of prizes, including the Golden Pitchfork, which is the most coveted, which is not only funding to win, but it can be then used in your compost pile. And that is for the most volunteer hours put in. And so we've got a handful of folks who are putting in 100 plus hours, but it's pretty competitive. But the biggest part that brings us all together is working to make the world better. Here are 3 of our great volunteers. Lou, again, who teaches. And then Barb Ryder is on the right. She maintains that Casey Compost Center. She was an IT tech for HP for a number of years. And quickly, separate but related, I wanted to just bring this up to SWAC as a little primer. That's me burying garbage in my backyard. And which we know is legal because you can bury anything in your backyard. But this is a proven method that has been used in Japan for a number of years. where you pickle your food, basically. So I spend, that's a 5-gallon bucket, and I get food waste. I've got a couple of folks I collect from. And then you drain off the leachate, and after 2 weeks, and every time you add the food in, you sprinkle in EM, it's called, essential microorganisms. And when you pull the thing out, and I've got a lot more information on this, it's got all of this bacillus white, you know, it smells just like pickled food. And then you cover it up, you put it in a trench, you cover it up with about 12 inches of soil, and then the soil bioremediates it for another 2 weeks, and then you can plant right into your garden. When I dug that dirt, I had no worms in there. When I went back to plant, the thing was teeming with life. And so I'm going to basically go down my whole planting section there. But the point here is I handle about, just myself individually, close to 1,000 pounds of food waste a year. So there are other options for handling food waste rather than just putting out a bin and driving trucks around. So that's something that I can bring back more information on. I'm going to be presenting that at the Washington State Recycling Association next week. So finally, we definitely want folks to become master composter recyclers. We look for about 30 folks a year to come through our program. It's online. Next one starts January 24th. And that's all I've got.
One thing I forgot to tell you about that you can't match is Dirt Huggers has the beer must from the big what's the full sale beer at Hood River.
Well, they have all the wort.
Yeah, the wort. And so they sprinkle that in the middle of the piles, and because they don't charge full sale anything, when the truck comes, it also brings a lot of beer.
That's the difference between private sector and public sector.
That's right. The Orientals call it cum shop.
Thanks, Pete. We wanted to.
That was good. Pardon?
City and table.
Yes. Let's. Okay. Anything else?
Okay.
Chuck or Kim, anything else from their sectors?
I had the opportunity to join at AOR conference. I guess I was calling it the Food Waste Conference, but
Spring Forum.
The focus was on food waste, and so some kind of highlights for me coming out of that. Kind of two different categories. Just one, got a lot of ideas around just marketing. There's kind of a change in terminology that they're putting there. Instead of calling it food waste, wasted food. Just that kind of mind change and focus on educating people about how much we're wasting food is a big focus within that group. And I appreciate that different kind of change in language, because there's so much waste in that process of growing the food, transporting the food, storing the food, serving the food, and then just throwing it away. So the embodied energy and just that whole stream is pretty immense. And there was the number thrown out that in Washington State in 2015, there was around 707,566 pounds of food waste thrown away. Comparing that to 270,000 pounds of yard waste. So the food waste is actually a considerable portion of our waste stream. Along that lines, they were saying that 17% of all garbage is wasted food. So it's a big chunk. So finding different ways. We have our master composter program that does really good tasks at trying to deal with that issue. But I think there's kind of interested to see different kinds of ways that we can kind of keep working on lowering that poundage in our area, whether that's through municipal food waste program, or whether it's just better, more marketing, and continue to kind of focus on that, those kind of efforts. I guess another kind of interesting part from that conference was, just a small little thing. They're up in Seattle, they're trying to kind of bring back an older technology, the anaerobic digester. Mm-hmm. So focusing on, they've got a pilot program with Fremont Brewery, who they're taking all their spent grains and hops and putting in an anaerobic digester and producing energy for their brewery. So that's just kind of another creative way of they're diverting that food residual. Maybe that's in the food residual category. So those are some kind of notes I got from that conference. It's great to have the staff, solid waste staff there. I did sit at the table of Michelle, the Green Schools program. And it was great seeing her kind of network with other school programs around the region. Particularly, there are just so many regulations and weird loopholes trying to figure out how you can divert food waste in the schools. Whether it's just providing a table at a school for food at the end of the cafeteria day to be sat out for students to take away. But a lot of school districts are afraid to do that because there's loopholes around school funding, but other school districts have to figure out how to deal with that. And so good networking having there for our staff, so that was good to see.
If you can, go up to Boardman and see the pit up there where all our garbage is put.
Yeah.
They have cells, of course, and and they put pipes in there for the methane. Well, I thought that's really neat. And then they pipe the methane down to the powerhouse, and the powerhouse have two huge generators that put power, burn the methane, and make electricity power. And I thought, well, that's cool, but it's probably adding to the gas stream or the CO2, you know. And no. Then they take the hot gas from the generators and they pipe it under the road to another factory over there, and they dry all our onions with the steam heat from the stuff. So it's there. You go. You see
capturing
the energy, and then even the waste products are working on it. So it's interesting. So do that if you can.
Yeah.
Okay. Anything else? Okay, we'll go to Vancouver. Rich?
Okay, so real quick, I'll try and go chronologically. People remember the snows this last winter? It's been kind of a long winter, finally over now. So we debriefed with Waste Connections, kind of what went well there, what could we improve next year. I think we've really come a long way, probably in the last 8 or 10 years, about how we notify people. So the whole call blast piece is really good. People will get a call, you know, if their garbage isn't going to be picked up. Unfortunately, this year it was like 7 days in a row, right? No garbage picked up. So we had some challenges at some commercial sites and some multifamily sites, and so we're trying to kind of work through that, hoping it doesn't come for another 8-10 years. And let's see, on April 1st, the city increased the utility tax. It had been 21.5%, it went to 24.9%. The rationale for that was one of a number of ways they're helping to raise more money for the police program. And so that changed April 1st for city residents. Our yard debris and tire coupons are out now since early April. Those have another 2 months to run, so if you're in the city, you should get with your Waste Connections bill that came out in early April. Two coupons for a load of yard debris to be delivered, and then up to 4 tires can be delivered to a number of sites. And then the next piece coming up, August 1st, City Council decided that they're going to do an annex called the Van Mall North. So that's scheduled to happen October 1st, and we're underway with planning with Waste Connections on how to do the conversion from basically people need to be in a different size cart. We'll get recycling will happen every other week instead of weekly. And they'll also have a garbage cart. Have to get rolled out to them. So that's coming up in the next, I think before we meet again. No?
August or October 1st?
October, August 1st.
Okay.
Did I say October?
Yeah.
Oh, sorry.
Said August.
August.
I initially meant said October.
Okay, yeah. August 1st. That's it. Questions? Okay. Waste Connections, how are you doing?
Wonderful. Fantastic. Excuse me. So, just a couple things to note. We're working with Tidewater right now. Mike talked about some of the issues we have with some of the containers are aging, and just with volumes and everything else we've seen over the years, ensuring that they're keeping up with that increase. One thing just to note today, I was just looking at how much we did in volumes. One of the things we look at kind of what comes in on the routes and then what we call third party, so the self-haul material that's coming in, can be commercial or residential. But last year, the first Monday in May, we did 360 tons in that category. And this year, the first Monday in May, we did about 520 tons. So we've seen it's just a one-day sample. Who knows what was going on with weather last year on the first day of May, but there is an incredible amount of volume coming in the door right now. So we're working on those challenges and how to move the material around. Other things we have going on, we're working with the county on a commercial block foam collection program similar to the residential block foam program at Central Transfer Station. There will have to be the county is paying for the residential program. This will be an open market on the commercial side, and so there will be a charge for it. And we would want to limit how much customers bring in a single scoop, but we can help them get the material. If they have large volumes, we can help them get it directly to the processor down to Tigers rather than bringing in the county station they want. We're also moving forward on some commercial plastic film ideas to try and bail and move that material. Asbestos is a big deal right now. Metro increased its regulations April 1st, and so that has brought with it some customers from the Portland area that are trying to sneak in the door as well, just reminding us that we need to do a better job of being clear on our definitions of what we'll accept. So we're working with city staff and county staff on that. And then we talked about the allocation study. So we have the allocation study coming up in June, and that's where we basically analyze the contents of the blue carts and what's in the different facilities, and it translates into the rate model as well. But one of the big things for us is just to know what's the contamination level, what's in the carts, as that evolves over time. You know, less newspaper, more cardboard kind of things. So we'll see what happens. And that's a four-week process, basically, for us.
With a huge building with apartments and the single-family housing and a casino and all of this, you must have had a whole bunch of contractor increase the contractor.
That's kind of what we're thinking is happening. Technically, nobody should be paying any other haulers for material in. So typically, if you're larger contractors that are self-hauling their material into the transfer station rather than using our Dropbox system. So that's probably what's driving that tonnage up. But the casino, they went online the second or third week in April. So we're hauling a compactor tube a day out of there right now, as well as they have cardboard, food waste, commingle. They've done the whole.
Now, did the county get involved in that because it's a private entity that's not part of the United States?
I think the county. They have a hauler, so that's a private.
Right, we have a private contract with them. Right. They're outside of the utilities and transportation or the county or any of their sovereign nations. So. Mm-hmm. Private contract.
And the only arenas that the county, as I understand it, was the sheriff's office for security. The sheriff's office in Winona.
For law enforcement.
For law enforcement. We had talked to them about a couple of other things, food being the primary one, and they decided to find their own way to do a food inspection, compliant.
Probably have a dietitian, I would think. Different place, I would think.
So,
certainly new and exciting for our community, I'm sure. Well, thank you very much.
Unless you're trying to get a little center on Friday.
Tell Scott we missed him.
Yes, we'll pass that along.
That's right. Okay. Tip fees, Mike.
Actually, it's Chuck. I'm here to provide any history of
the
answer.
You're the shield.
Question. Yes.
Protective. Okay.
Yeah, this is patrol. We're working on the patrols this afternoon. Who's Charlie McCarthy?
Yep.
So, real quick, so what? Yeah, let me get this presentation up. So want to talk about some discussions we've been having internally. This, as I alluded to earlier, we are looking at, again, another likely reduction. I don't think it's a question that it'll be a reduction. I think it's more of how much coming into the grant funding that's sourced out of the Model Toxics Control Act. Quickly, we just wanted to go through the last couple of bienniums of the cuts experienced from that source to the county. So these were resources, grant funds that the county got from ecology through this funding source. The last, the 2017 to 2019, is projected based again on the number, of the, based, in essence, a 33% cut from the prior biennium. That the numbers that we've seen that I talked to earlier look like. What we wanted to also point out, you know, from our perspective, is that you know, this, we had already made elimination of several, I think, popular programs that the department organized. We oversaw the household hazard, mobile household hazardous waste collection events throughout the county. Household hazardous waste collection program for senior citizens. We were looking at the time, now this is before the SWEO came to, so prior they were looking at having a person who would oversee household hazardous waste program, decided not to fill that because of and these are just three of the sort of significant things that we've already cut out of the program. So again, we're looking at further cuts. We've already made choices based on the prior reductions. What we want to talk about is the grant funding supports several programs that I know that you're familiar with, some of the things we've talked about tonight and talked about in many prior SWAC meetings. The enforcement program, and I'm not going to read every single one of these, but again, provides a lot of only just review of facilities that are managing and waste and or recyclables, and then just sort of these things that pop up out of the county. Little independent businessmen, et cetera, and then just neighbor nuisance issues are all over the county. Our site hazard assessment program does a lot of work looking at hazardous material release sites through this, the same source of grant funds. There's a lot of work done in investigating, following up on reports of those things. Those elevated blood level, we also, through the grant, follow up when there's a reportable condition of a child that has elevated blood level. And then do in-home inspections to follow up to find sources. So, and then again, we talked a lot about solid waste education and outreach, all the good work, a lot of which we talked about tonight, and Green Business, Green Neighbors, Green Schools, Master Compost, Recycling, a lot of work that leverages a lot of activity throughout the county and a lot of, you know, getting people to understand how to better manage their waste and what happens when they don't. I think Sarah, you're going to talk about the event. Okay, so I won't say anything about that. And then finally, solid waste operations. Again, Kim primarily, but working with folks from the other programs and the rest of the team, a lot of these supporting these community waste days and recycling days, and helping on sort of special waste and recyclables at those events. And then again, just the enough level of effort to look at the regional solid waste system and help manage and maintain the existing system. So a lot of things that we can't say specifically how we make choices, but a lot of good work that's going on every day that is potentially at risk as the funds continue to reduce. So what we want to do is we want to look at how do we begin to sustain some real core important programs. And so we're going to present to you some our current thoughts on how to increase, we call it adjusting, but basically would be increasing the solid waste tipping fee to sustain service levels in several of these programs. And again, you know, right now the rate that we're suggesting is really focused on those losses and the ability to sustain those programs, several of those programs. So what we've done here is first give you a sort of a comparison of, and these, by the way, I want to say these numbers, tipping fee numbers for our county and the other counties are from 2016 on a college report that was just recently published. Actually, I think it was confirmed our current as of today due to, I think, CPI increases is $88.88 per ton. But nonetheless, we wanted to be able to compare apples to apples. These are the four closest-sized counties to Clark County in the state of Washington, presenting population numbers, their tipping fees per ton. And also, I thought it would be insightful to look at median household income in those counties as another factor. But in essence, the conclusion from this that we hope you reach and that others would reach is that that you know our rate is very low compared to comparable counties in Washington.
On an annual basis, what's the revenue from our tip fees?
As far as fees that we're already receiving?
Yeah, like on an annual basis, if we're charging $87 a ton, how much do we generate?
The county itself?
Yeah.
We just take a portion of that that's set by the contract, and I'd have to get that figure to you.
But that's essentially what you're looking at is to increase that revenue stream to offset the proposed cuts in the program.
That's correct. Okay. And I can get those figures to you really
easily. I'm just trying to get a order of magnitude of what we're talking about.
Yeah.
Okay. Right, so that's the total tip fee of which the county gets a slice.
Right. Just a small slice, okay. Yeah. And that is set by the contract. And it is CPI, and CPI has been, as you know, flat since, you know, 08, and that's killing us, too.
I know.
You get a
That sounds about
right.
I was going to say 1.7.
The amount of grant funding covered under the raw project control account, we're talking about per year is $631,000. A one-third reduction would be about $210,000.
Okay. So that's a proposed fee increase would be used to address that $200,000.
Yeah.
Okay. I'm with you.
And we'll show you some ranges just based on, like, we're assuming that's at the 33% expected. Again, it's not guaranteed that it will be funded at all. So we also just wanted to look at the range just to give an idea of the ranges if there were further cuts beyond that.
Okay.
What was CPI again?
0.59, wasn't it this year or something? Astronomically low.
What does it stand for?
Oh, consumer prices. Okay, so here's where we've run the numbers basically, you know, and these are three scenarios of the grant funding cuts, just again looking from what we're expecting, the 33% cut through, potentially not getting any funding. And so again, these ranges of estimated rate increase per ton, the top row, is based on estimates, varying estimates of the volume of tonnage that are based on our numbers and I think some numbers from Metro, correct, Jeff?
The incoming, yes.
Incoming. So at the top are the rate increase per ton. Again, using the 2016 numbers, you add that would be the new ton, that would be the new rate. These are the percentages that represents a very small percentage increase in the per tonnage rate. And then the other thing is I think estimated about 5 cents on the dollar per dollar. Is that right?
Through the city's rate models and the county's rate UTC rate models, typically $1 per ton increase at the transfer stations equates to 5 to 6 cents at the curb.
So this is, so the bottom line is the increase that the consumer would see.
So the top line is dollars and cents.
That's right. Okay. That's, yeah. Right. That's
not
cents.
Percentage. Got it.
No. Right. Cents.
And increase of the curb, like per month.
3 cents per month.
Oh wow.
Yeah.
So.
I mean, it's it. It's something that I think is we definitely need to evaluate. I mean, one of my concerns, and I relayed this to our management team, is that in addition to the funding that particularly enforcement receives from grants, we're also subsidizing that through the Fund 4014, which is a solid waste fund to the tune of $125,000 a year. And so as those revenues continue to, you know, our revenue stream is flat or continues to go down, and staffing costs, even if...
Got to keep going up?
Yeah, and so we're in this kind of a perfect storm that we definitely need to start taking a look at how do we maintain the services first and then come back potentially later with a strategic plan for the entire system, and this is in the works. To really evaluate, you know, what the system needs are, and what the funding requirements to maintain and or meet the growth here. I mean, what Derek was talking about, the growth is astronomical.
Well, if you're using 2016 figures that they were building, and like we were just talking about, you know, construction and the casino and all of this is in the 2016, there must have been some growth in the tonnage too, and you're getting the gross off the top of that. So I mean, if you're still using those figures, still are going down in the hole, it looks like you need some help.
I think it needs to be considered, and particularly, like I say, Melissa's one body, and the complaints don't go down when the population goes up.
They
go up.
Yeah.
And you know, I. You know, so I'll let Chuck.
So again, I think we wanted to show the need. Again, the value that I think a lot of the work, not only the enforcement work, but the, as you're well aware, a lot of the other programs provide, and what you know we look at as a modest recommendation to sustain those services and sustain. Will sustain those services in the county. Just for the sake again of a visual way to evaluate the table I showed we showed earlier, just the differences in these the rate in Clark County versus the closest populated counties in the rest of Washington. And then again, I mean, just visually to take like if we took that max number. That was in the earlier table. What that really represents, it's very modest what we're recommending, and we don't know what or if the other counties are going up, but we at least wanted to show those comparisons again. So we wanted to introduce that we would like to move forward with this. We'll be presenting this also to the Solid Waste Steering, the Regional Solid Waste Steering Committee. And then eventually we would have to take it to the board to recommend the board of county councilors to recommend this increase the tipping fees. And so we wanted to give you this information to let you know how we're looking at this, what the need is, and you know, see if you have any questions, any thoughts, suggestions. I think ultimately ultimately we'd probably come back and ask the board to support it so that when we went to the council, if you supported it, that you could go to them and say that you were supporting this. I think part of the way at this point is waiting a little bit longer to find out what the grant impacts might be. So I don't know if I covered everything, but I did.
I got questions.
Any other questions, Jack?
Yeah. So when's the last time you raised tip fees?
Outside of CPI?
Yeah.
I'd have to look. They actually, I think, they negotiated a decrease and split the tip fees apart. So there used to be one single tip fee, and then they instituted the transaction fee. That would have been, it's gone, isn't it? I think it was like in the 90s.
Okay.
Other than CPI.
So CPI is the only thing driving fees.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Right.
And it was keeping up, in our admin fee was keeping up until, like I say, the flat CPI, and the recycling markets tanked.
We've lost funding from other sources.
And we've lost this grant funding that was kind of that cushion.
I think there was the tip. The transaction fee was added, I think, like in 98, 99.
Okay, that's right.
So that was the $10 per trip transaction fee was added at that point. And I think, I want to think that the Dropbox rate and the MSW rate.
That was all done at the same time.
Was that done at the same time?
I think so. I got all those facts.
So that might have been when Waste Connections purchased CRC. Because I think there was a decrease at that point.
There was a decrease, but I thought that happened in 90.
It was like 99.
99 or 97.
Yeah, it was about the time of the
right
transaction fee.
But I have all those facts.
Okay.
I mean, I have tables and everything.
But clearly, that's good to also put that. Because that's a good question.
If I'm going to give you advice on a presentation, I mean, you lay the background out. You talk about the economic factors that have happened over a period of time and about the loss of funding that's happening in other places. And I would think, I would advise you to think strategically and consider doing a modest fee increase every year above and beyond the CPI so that not only you can sustain the existing programs, but you can grow the programs to follow the population growth that's going to take place in the county. I'd be having that mindset if I was making rate recommendations.
Well, and along those lines, I think some of this will come out of the regional system studies. One of the things that we will be evaluating, and we've had a pilot program now for about a year of adding an additional day at Central Transfer Station for HHW. That was in conjunction with eliminating the, at one point, 19 collection events.
Yep.
And so there is a cost associated with that.
Yep.
We're going to bring in an accountant to evaluate that cost, work with Waste Connections just on that one day. But as part of the regional system study, which will be, it could take us up to 2 years to complete that. I think we will be looking at, you know, additional days of operation at the facilities. You know, West Van's closed on Sundays. Additional days of operation for the HHW facilities to shift some of these things, the costs, over to the system. But I don't want to go too far down that right now because I think that's, it's out here. But you will be very heavily involved in the strategic planning piece. But this is to get us whole.
You want to stay even.
We need to stay even right now. Yeah.
I understand that. And this chart is a compelling chart. Because you compare us with comparable folks and fees, and you tell the story about why we're where we are, and you say we have room for growth to be even with our compatriots.
Yeah, and even across the river, Metro is 90. What is it now? 98
or 96? With all the fees in.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
So I mean,
yeah,
we're still low.
I mean, you've got education. Mission ahead of you to educate the policymakers, but you use slides like that, you're going to make an easy sell. It's a compelling story.
Like I said, my real concern is I'm seeing a lot more of them. Now that I'm here, I'm seeing a lot more of these complaints that I just wouldn't have known about.
Right.
And the fact that we've only got one person in this county in my time, it's just...
And the county's growing. The population is growing, and the demand is going to increase along with it. You've got to tell that story.
Something I didn't know. Sorry. With increased tonnage, our fee revenue, our portion of the sewer revenue, does not grow. So as the population grows, our portion of the fee revenue that's collected doesn't grow.
And so that has to be renegotiated for that to happen.
Yep.
And like I said, at this point, this is a measure to get us whole in the short term while we evaluate more strategic options.
You want to make a motion on this so we could send them off to?
Yeah, you got my support.
I mean, why don't we even do that? So you've got something to back you up when you go up to talk about this.
So our next stop after this is the Regional Assistance Steering Committee next week, and then...
Well, what I would say, Alan, is when you're ready for us to make a motion to support you, you come back with what it is that you want, and let us take action on it.
Okay.
But it sounds like you're giving us information, previews of coming attractions, and when you've got something specifically you want us to support, bring it back, and we'll give you our support. I will. I mean, this is a compelling story, and it's an important story.
And I have a couple questions, too. One is, if you're doing this approach, does that require a contract change?
Not with this approach. It requires a board action, and then the contract allows Waste Connection CRC to pass this through.
Yep.
So it does, how it works is we would notify them that this fee is going to be implemented through resolution. And there's a 75 or 90 day waiting period. We were settled that, was it 90 or 75?
UTC.
75. And so UTC's got to be notified, and then they raise the tip fee, and then it gets passed through to the UTC customers.
And so that's kind of my other question on the timing. Could we do this January 1?
There's some concerns with some of the enforcement and the site hazard assessment group on that. I think we can talk about that internally. I have discussed that already. The fund balance for health, which is fund 1025, is operating below recommended margins. We're in a situation that on solid waste side operating funds, we can float for a while. We'd have to figure that out.
Okay, well, thanks. Yep. Thanks, we'll be back.
Yeah. Well, we'll just invite further.
Oh, appreciate you there.
Sorry. Good job, Mike.
I'm going to get out of here.
Okay. Sarah, what you got? Just a mouse in the corner back there.
I'm not really there.
Thanks.
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 Thanks. Thanks.
Thanks.
Thanks. Thanks.
Thanks.
Thanks. Thanks. Thanks. Thanks. Thanks. Thanks. Thanks.
Thanks. Thanks. Thanks. Thanks. Thanks.
Thanks. Thanks. Thanks.
Yeah, so
having that story in there, that was moving to the last Slack meeting. There was a focus on the volatility of the funding stream, the NTAC fund.
Yeah, NTAC. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So I don't know if that was really too in depth in that presentation.
Well, do you want to use this adapter?
Yeah.
Oh, do you need to use the adapter?
Yeah, I can get into it.
I think you have it. So did you want to see that real quick? Did you want to see that slide again, or just a little more history is what you're interested in?
That was just a compelling story I heard at the last SWAC meeting, so I'm just hammering that in.
Okay, thanks. Yeah. Okay. Okay, sir. Looks like you have an adapter. Turn it off.
Well, I didn't see that one over there.
Yeah.
Well, I can just... Okay, I guess we're plugging in now.
Can you do it with hand shadows, you think?
Yeah, I took them. The class. But anyway. Oh, there we go.
There we go. Great.
I'm here to talk with you all about our business outreach programs and what I do with the Clark County Green Business Program. Primarily what I do and what the program is a recognition and certification program, but I also have a couple of added projects that I've been working on lately that I'd like to give you an update on, and those are the Green Awards that were held on March 23rd and also an update on our food waste outreach project. So about the certification program, it's completely voluntary. I don't twist anyone's arm to join. What businesses do when they say they'd like to be a green business is do a baseline assessment of their practices and they receive technical assistance from service providers and our partners. And they're also invited to monthly networking events that we host and receive some promotion and recognition from Clark County for being green. They come to me for a lot of different reasons. These are just a few that I've heard over the years of wanting to educate staff, wondering if there are opportunities and resources that Clark County has available to them to help them with things like training, recycling training, or doing additional events like employee benefit fairs and those types of things. They might want to look to conserve resources, cut costs, you know, you guys know all about that. But additionally, they sometimes are looking to engage to be a good partner in the community. So it's a great way to kind of create connections between businesses. So as far as the on-site assistance goes, there are some partners involved. We are Public Health now. And then I partner with the County Public Works Department on some pollution prevention in stormwater and those types of things. And Clark Public Utilities and Waste Connections. So to earn the certification of being green through this program, the assessing business practices are in these six categories. And as I mentioned with the partners, they kind of get plugged in to provide the technical expertise and a more detailed assessment with all of these businesses. When I say businesses in general, I'll just say now that the program is open to absolutely any business operating in Clark County with a site. So we view processes within a building, building infrastructure, and employees and training and policy. So the variety of businesses I've worked with over the years are pretty significant. I've worked with everyone from you know, owner-operated food truck up to Legacy Salmon Creek Hospital. So it's a huge variety, and there are all sorts of different impact areas that a business will choose to focus on. And I pulled this as an example. I don't know, that's probably way too small to read. So just to give a sense of what that assessment physically looks like, it's a fillable PDF document with checkboxes and fill-in-the-blanks. And this is for waste reduction, recycling, and purchasing. I try to provide a menu of options and then say, especially given all of the variety of business sectors I work with, I kind of let them pick and choose what might be applicable. So, you know, like choose through these actions, and then that will help you be certified. And what I do as far as the on-site assistance, aside from kind of administering the overall certification process, so I am kind of a liaison sometimes between the businesses and the other partners in the program, and I also do a certification visit where I walk through and kind of go through the documentation that they've collected in all of those different areas. And then I primarily focus on the assistance side with the waste and recycling, obviously, we're solid waste. And that's me holding handfuls of meatballs. We do, every business that joins the program is required to do a waste sort. And so that is unique as far as comparing our recognition program to other regional similar programs. And I do that because the snapshot and the photos are really valuable. The overarching goal of having these assessments is really to give the people I'm working with, the green team leader, the owner, operator of the business, the information they need to make decisions with the environment and with resource conservation in mind.
I'd like to add that there's a big help in this too, because you get stuck over the PUD electric bill or something, and then she'll come in and say, well, this is the way you handle it. Because I went through this, and my green team and Legacy went with her through the whole program, and it can get very complicated.
So the role, yeah, and this is, so they're just to give some numbers to provide a little bit of that context. The program launched as a pilot in 2011 and then officially came into existence in general in 2012. And so over those years, we've brought about 80 businesses through the program. And you know, I don't know what the failure rate is, but I know that there have been businesses that haven't met my minimum requirements in order to earn the status of being a green business. And I'd like to think that I set a pretty modestly low bar, honestly. The purpose of the program is engagement, participation, continuous improvement. It is not to be a third-party auditor, necessarily, and go and drill down into too many details. But I can be a cheerleader and a researcher and a detailed person when it's once I create that partnership with a business and they have questions. So one of the other elements of the program are monthly networking events. And the concept behind these, and they're free and open to anyone, but the concept is that I am one person and I have these partners that go provide on-site assistance, but really we have a county full of people interested in greening projects and practices and lots of people with expertise who have done projects and have implemented new practices and policies. And so we'd like to bring the business community together to share those ideas and learn from each other rather than be singularly out doing all this great work in the community. And this is the information for the next one. We'll be at Waste Connections, thank you Waste Connections, to talk about food waste composting. It's really nice that that has come up a lot in conversation tonight. And also now to kind of do a backtrack recap of the Green Awards. Historically, over the last 4 or 5 years, I've hosted what we've called a Green Business Showcase event, and that was to celebrate and recognize all of the businesses that have gone through and earned their Green Business certification. And this year, I wanted to take a different approach and try to create a broader, more community-oriented event. So the Green Awards were born, and we wanted there to be some education, so I invited an organization called Washed Ashore. Can you tell them on vacation for the next week after this? So Washed Ashore does a lot of environmental education around marine debris and plastic pollution, and they build giant sculptures, animal sculptures, with the debris that's collected on Oregon beaches through cleanup events. So it's really, they have a really engaging program and a great presentation at these awards, and we thought it would be a good tie-in with our messaging that goes out to Recycled Arts Festival. So it was good to have them with us as well. And then really the concept of, I'm all about tying people in and making connections, and with our outreach programs, we do a lot individually with different audiences, but I thought, what a great way to bring teachers and educators into a room to see which retail shops have green practices and kind of cross-pollinate the community that way. And we had six categories, and overall there were 32 nominations, and some of the categories got a lot more nominations than others. And what you're seeing to the right there is what one of the awards. We had them made by a recycled artist, so that it's actually recycled material that was given. And I just wanted to talk quickly about Cadet, because they're currently one of my all-star certified green businesses, and they won the large business category. Unlike most of the other businesses I work with who are constantly asking me about block foam recycling, they took it a step further and didn't want to have to handle it on site anymore, and so they made the ask to their vendors, could you stop packaging our incoming shipments in that material? And the 90% of their foam is now eliminated because most, not all, of the vendors agreed to do that. So that's kind of a good news story. And then quickly on the food waste outreach front. So as we've been hearing, and things kind of seem to be coalescing around food being a really big issue. And within the, you know, in 2012 when we did our last waste stream analysis, within the commercial component of the waste stream, one third was food waste or wasted food. I'm working on adopting that language. We'll see. So, finally, we kind of came together and said, you know, this is a real big issue, and green business recognition doesn't exactly target a material and work towards diversion efforts. So, I have an amazing AmeriCorps volunteer working with me now who's doing outreach to restaurants in the Hazeldell area, and really the goal was to kind of raise awareness that food waste composting collection exists here in Clark County, and also just to kind of assess attitudes informally by speaking with these restaurant managers of how do you feel about this? You know, what are you recycling? And we're currently looking at the information that she's collected so far, but she kind of was able to get in touch with almost 60 businesses and surveyed that through that informal survey about 30 of them. I think 33 is my favorite number, but I think it might actually be 31. I was like looking at the data. Yeah, kind of just added two. I think I was looking at the wrong chart that she had sent me. But if that was, you know, just late this afternoon, so we're still investigating kind of what the information she's been able to collect tells us. But I can say out of the 29 to 33 businesses that were surveyed, that seven just said right off the bat, sure, this food composting thing sounds like a great idea. I'm ready, sign me up. So I thought that was a really good sign in terms of being able to work with. Restaurants are kind of challenging to work with, you know, there's high turnover within management and you know, it's a fast-paced environment with very low profit margins, so really being able to intercept and make change within that environment can be really challenging. So the fact that seven managers were just eager to say, let's do it, make the switch, was a really good sign to me. So we're going to be following up with those that were interested and continuing to, over the next couple months, look at what all of the information we were able to glean does say about restaurants.
Does Waste Connection come by then and pick all that up from them?
Yes. So, little known fact is that Waste Connection does have their service available to businesses.
See, because at Legacy, we picks up really good the stuff out of the kitchen. But, you know, if you don't eat your pizza up in the cafeteria, it goes in the garbage.
Mm-hmm. So we picked restaurants because they're, you know, like high volume, there's a lot of material there. And focusing on where all that material is coming from is primarily the back of the house and kitchen area. So if we can kind of focus on that,
Because we can't get those doctors to put their pizza.
I don't know if you recall, but gosh, it's got to be nearly almost a decade ago was when Portland rolled out their food composting, and we kind of rolled out, and Burgerville was an early adopter of trying to do front of the house where people go and eat source separating for food waste, and I would call it a failure, but you know. That's me on the outside, just a diner. But, you know, it really is challenging to educate individuals going into that space. But back in the kitchen, we can train staff and college it.
Go to Jefferson Junior High School, watch them do it. Mm-hmm.
Question for you. So how does the general public know, for those that are very eco-conscious, which businesses are considered certified green?
So there, wow, I can't believe I didn't put a slide in there for that. I have a directory on the website, so clarkgreenbiz.com has a directory available with a little description and address and website of the businesses that are currently certified.
Now, do the businesses have something they can put in their place that does a certificate that says, We meet X criteria.
And we do a wall-mounted plaque as well as window claims. And we also offer an electronic version of our logo to be used wherever they want, basically. We give them free reign to promote themselves as a green business. And down the road kind of a marketing toolkit related to those concepts for how to promote yourself as a green business. Kind of been on my sort of peripheral to-do list for a couple of years now because I think it'd be really useful. Businesses have had varying degrees of success in using that, and I, you know, the ones that do make it really prominent, and others I think maybe just haven't gotten that mindset yet.
And more so, you know, this is a very eco-friendly community, and I think if more people knew that, you know, Joe's Burger Stand was certified, they might see an uptick in these more eco-conscious folks. So I think continuing to work with them on marketing their work would be a big benefit to both businesses and.
It's huge. And I mean, just within, you know, I only have so many avenues for doing that type of promotion, but along those lines, one of the things we started doing is creating a little spotlight that highlights the green business, and I include that in my monthly newsletter, but our Green Neighbors newsletter that's distributed to many more thousands of residents also has that same little case study. So it's just to get that one and maybe a little bit more detail.
No reason why your logo couldn't be right next to Visa and say, come in the door.
Dream come true.
Yep, there you go. Good job.
I just wanted to add about the Green Awards, because it was the first Green Awards, and I know it's hard, it's an evening event and everyone's busy, but there was a couple things that I thought. One is you guys did a fantastic job of implementing it. It went so smoothly, just really wonderful videos of all the nominees and award winners, so there was a lot of really good work done to execute it. Secondly, Mark McCauley, the county manager, they didn't show you the pictures of the people. He talked a little bit about it. But one of the things I thought he said that I thought was really great, that again, it goes back to the work of Sarah Sarah and Kim and Pete, et cetera, is, you know, these programs are pulling in all these businesses and schools and people in the community. And so the thing that he said, but it really resonated with me too, because you don't think about it all the time because you're just working every day, is how this core of people, and obviously the city too, has this leverage, just all of this just phenomenal, you know, effort across the county, and how valuable, again, you know, just really in the way a handful of people makes so much happen across the county in education and actually change happening. So it was really kind of inspiring to see that. So hopefully, as they continue, you guys have a chance to see that yourself. It was very impressive.
Okay. Thank you, Sarah.
If you got a business that you regularized and they weren't really part of the program anymore, and how do you kick them off? Like, I know you're more of a cheerleader.
That's a very fair question. Because I do, like I said, it's about partnership. It's about encouragement. But I have had to pull people, but it's never been because they've said, no, I'm not doing something. It's been basically non-communication.
Yeah.
So it seems like a mutual passing. Mm-hmm. But also along those lines, a certification is kind of a snapshot. So I go into a business one day. Who knows whether, you know, they're properly, like, have a lid on their container of whatever, or, you know, I mean, 6 months later. The program is built in with an annual renewal process to go meet with everybody, but with more than 80 businesses and, you know, 20 to 25 new ones every year, that's just not feasible. And I had anticipated, EnviroStars was an environmental certification program started in the Puget Sound area, and the Department of Ecology funded a project to move and transition that to be a statewide green business program. So I sort of envisioned that we would sign on to that program, and then that transition would be my most recent renewal. But I opted to not do that for a lot of reasons, and now I'm wondering how this renewal and kind of recharging the certified businesses, what that's going to look like this year.
Yeah.
So stay tuned. But there is that component of you do want to continuously check back. And I do have it built into the requirement that, you know, if for any reason you're no longer meeting the requirements of green business, you're supposed to let us know and say, yeah, I just got this notice of violation.
You have to take the logo off the door.
Yeah.
How do you do that?
Anything else for the good of the cause? Well, we just had Earth Day, and I went out with the Legacy Green Team, and we cleaned up the approaches to 139th overpass, which is right by Legacy, all the campuses around there, the height and the parking structure. We got a pickup truck level filled with 38 bags of litter. And in the rain, much less, soaked, absolutely. And I don't know if you've noticed, but on May 1st, there was an article in the Columbian about Oregon's new bottleneck went to 10 cents, and they were only recycling two-thirds of the bottles up until then, but now they're just, you know, swapped. And they think some of it's because people were saving their cans for the 1 April start, but definitely we should see less. If you have bottles or cans, it's a good place to take them now. And there's a lady, Kathleen, somebody with the Parks Department, deals with you know, cleaning up the parks and doing things like that. And I've been talking with her about volunteering to do different things about cleaning up the parks and something like that. And she's with the Clark County Parks Department. Anything else?
There might be a public comment, maybe. Are you, Philip?
Anything to add for us?
I just came to observe.
Okay.
Welcome.
Welcome, anytime. Anything else for the good of the cause? If not, when do we meet again?
That would be in August.
August.
That's the next planned quarterly meeting.
Yeah. Next plan.
Likely setting.
Yeah.
And at this point, probably July, because it would be too short. Try to convene something. We'll let you know.
We'll send out a digital
form.
Yeah. And do work with Mike on moving that, you know, like your thing, because we do support that.
Yeah, no, thanks. We'll be moving forward. We'll get the same presentation, maybe with some improvements for your suggestions to the regional solid waste system steering committee.
Again, I'd like to thank the staff for a well-planned meeting, and also all of you folks for attending. Meeting is adjourned.